Hello and welcome to the Firestarter Podcast, powered by our friendly neighbors at Nextdoor, the neighborhood app. It's easy to plug into your neighborhood right now by simply downloading the Nextdoor app or by visiting nextdoor.ca/flames. Ryan Dietrich and Brendan Parker with you, wherever you might be listening from. We're back in the meat grinder today after a nice little off day on Tuesday, and not going to lie, I got some sun. What about you, Parks? Get up to anything good?
I spent a lot of time outdoors. Yeah, that was nice. We had the little guy running around, nice. So we tried to just absolutely bury him with outside time. Just zap every last bit of energy so we could get a nice sleep. And so that was the goal. That was the game plan yesterday. And it was nice. It was nice to have some sunshine.
Speaking of,
got a little run in.
The meat grinder for you as a parent, it never stops, does it? Jeez, got to keep him busy. Oh,
no, absolutely. Got to keep him busy. Got to keep the wheels in motion. They're happier that way, though.
Yeah, no, that's a win for everybody, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Hey, let's get right into it. I mean, the Flames are coming off a crucial three-game set with the Montreal Canadiens this past weekend. And, you know, it started off great, back-to-back victories, and the Flames are back to within 4 points of that final playoff spot. But Montreal pushed back in that final meeting on Monday, and the deficit is now back to 6. I mean, we saw some really good things, but obviously, if you're the Flames, you really needed all three.
You sure did, yeah, and I think everybody kind of sensed that. I mean, it was the second time in 11 days you had a chance to get within 2 points, and that's kind of where the opportunity, you know, feels missed. But when you look at the season series as a whole, you know, obviously you did a lot of good things there. It's just the position you put yourself in. It's just not good enough to leave that series 6 points behind just because of the games remaining. And, you know, obviously Montreal still, you know, they're not out of the woods yet. They did themselves a huge favor. And the fact that Vancouver lost at the same time to Ottawa.
Yeah.
Man, does that ever switch things? So you go from, you know, the position you were entering that game on Monday, you know, to where you could be with just a 2 point lead and only one game in hand on Calgary. And then, you know, you flip that switch. Now you got 6, you're headed back home for 4 straight. Vancouver loses 2, and we all know what their schedule looks like down the stretch. Suddenly you feel drastically different about the way that you're sitting now. And that's not even to say that they're playing their best hockey yet, because I think they would argue against that.
Sure.
I mean, they still have a lot of work to do before they get to the playoffs, just in terms of, you know, figuring out some of their issues moving forward. And obviously goal scoring is kind of one of their things too. But, you know, I thought they played a pretty good game here on Monday night. And I don't think Calgary played bad. Montreal figured out a way to just completely lock that game up and 100%. Did not give up much. I think Manch had that one tip in the third period that goes off the post, and it looked like it went in, comes out the other side, goes past Tkachuk, and then that was kind of as close as it got. Outside of that, they really didn't allow Calgary much time to set up, and it's hard to score. It's hard to get any offense when you can't set up in the offensive zone.
Yeah, I think that just really speaks to how difficult it is to pull off a sweep this season. I mean, we've kind of talked about it all year about how difficult that would be just when you're in it, mm-hmm. and you're getting to know a team's tendencies over a period of time, and really no different than the playoffs, right? I mean, the Flames absolutely had Montreal's number this year, and credit to them, but the Habs kind of figured something out. They adapted well and made those adjustments for the final meeting there, and it kind of speaks to what Daryl Sutter's been able to do for the Flames, right? Kind of institute a more defensively minded game into the rotation. So
yeah.
I think for the first time all season between these two teams, we actually saw the Canadiens employ something similar. So that's just what happens when you face a team, the same team 3 times in 4 nights, and you keep doing that over the course of several months, I think.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I think Eric and I were talking about it, Eric Francis, and I believe he had the stat from Sportsnet Stats, and I don't know if he ended up throwing it out there, but I think there's 33 game series this year in the NHL, and I believe 9 of them is what he said was actually completed sweeps. That doesn't include 4 games or 5
right.
games. It's just specifically 3-game sweeps. But I think there was at least 5 in the North Division, which was surprising to me. But Ottawa's had it done to him a couple of times. Obviously, there was the most famous one, which was Toronto over Edmonton,
right.
In Edmonton, which was the 3-game sweep that probably generated the most attention. But you're right. It's still not an easy thing to do 3 games in a row, especially when you're talking about this late in the season when both teams absolutely have to have those points, right? And you kind of look back. It's funny now that we're talking about it. I mean, both of those games that Calgary had an opportunity to get within 2 points of, you end up losing 2-1, right?
Right.
And one of the games, you know, you probably deserve to win. And, you know, maybe this one, I think Montreal, probably safe to say they played better and than the previous one. But both times you're talking about one goal games and, you know, maybe a post or a bounce here and there to being completely separate. And I actually thought Jake Allen was fighting it a bit in the early part of the game. But they figured it out, and that's all that matters. But you can just see how fine the line is, right?
It's funny you mentioned 2-1 because I think for the maybe the first time all year, I looked at the final score and I was thinking, yeah, 2-1, that's probably pretty appropriate considering how the game was played.
For sure.
There was no room out there. That's on either side. So, yeah. You know, I mean, credit to both teams, I think, in that sense, because you're starting to see playoff hockey already at this point in the season. But, you know, I think another thing that kind of factors in here, you're starting to see the impact of injuries, and we're going to get to what the Flames are dealing with in a second, but we know Montreal's been banged up. They lose one of their best players in Brendan Gallagher. Carey Price is on the mend and a few other guys out. We've seen it in Toronto, and Winnipeg has Nikolai Ehlers out. It's just becoming a theme where the schedule is kind of catching up to some teams, and I think that too kind of plays into it, where you may have had a team's number earlier in the season, but now you're kind of facing a different version of that team that you may have had success against earlier.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, every team is evolving now, especially with the injury situations and how they have to go about things. And, you know, at the end of the day, these guys, the coaches, the way that everybody, when you get this many looks at a team over and over again, there's no surprises for sure. But sometimes it's just the most subtle differences in terms of the way you want to attack something or a surprise a team that, you know, it can throw them off their game a little bit. And yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to me to see how these teams will go about it now when we get into the playoffs. And then you're starting to look at 7-game series after seeing them, you know, 9-10 times in the regular season. You know, that is a lot of meetings head to head in 1 year. And it's fascinating to me.
And you know what else adds to the uniqueness of this all is we don't even know what the playoff schedule is going to look like. What we do know is the regular season's been extended by, I think, almost 2 weeks in the North Division at this point. So we saw it last year in the bubble. There were back-to-back games. Do we see that again this year? I mean, who knows? There could be more rest opportunities, or it's just going to be a continuation of what we've seen so far, which is, you know, as you said, that's going to take a real toll on the body.
Sure. And what's the travel situation? Because we've talked about how it's been better with the current setup because you're not going from city to city. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about an entire country here in a playoff situation. So you're looking at most likely some cross-country travel for somebody, right? You know, I think right now as it stands, Edmonton, Winnipeg wouldn't be too bad in terms of travel. You know, you're only talking about one time zone and maybe an hour and a half flight or 90-minute flight. But if it's Toronto and XYZ, like if it's Toronto, Edmonton, if something works out like that, I mean, obviously it most likely won't be. Right now it's looking like it'll be Toronto, Montreal. But you never know. At some point it is going to be some type of cross-country travel. And does that, you know, play into the way that the schedule looks? And maybe you're that one day is going to be the travel day in the middle of it. And then you play back-to-backs or three and four and all of it is going to be a war of attrition when you look at the way that the playoffs are going to go. And at this point, we still don't even know what the final four is going to look like, or once we have to get out of the divisions. Right. Yeah. So it's all very interesting here. And the fact that the regular season's been delayed or I guess extended by a little bit kind of adds to that. But for the Calgary Flames, their schedule looks like almost like a, I don't even know. It's kind of unprecedented. And when you look at the final 2 weeks of a regular season where you have that many gaps, right, in terms of breaks in between games, it's kind of almost opposite of what a regular season finish would look like for them.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we may not know anything until that final week too. Like that's the strangeness of it all, is the Flames head to Vancouver at a point when the Montreal Canadiens have finished their schedule. So
yeah,
between now and the end of next week, I think it's going to be at least somewhat revealing in terms of what the playoff picture is going to look like. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver's not out of it yet.
No, either, they're not.
Just knowing how many games they have left and how many games in hand they have. But yeah, what is that picture going to look like when we get to those final Vancouver-Calgary meetings at the end of the year?
Well, we'll see if Ottawa has something to say about it, because currently they've had an impact on Vancouver, Calgary, and sure Montreal enough. And are definitely relishing the spoiler role, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're playing well right now.
So, you know, obviously a tough loss when it comes to the standings, but also on the subject of injuries, earlier that day, the Flames were dealt another tough blow when they learned that Noah Hanifin will be out for the rest of the season and will require surgery on his injured shoulder. So I don't know if you can overestimate exactly how much of a blow this is for the Flames. You lose one of your top defensemen. Just what do you think of the loss of him at what is obviously a critical point in the season here?
Without a doubt. And he's had, first and foremost, you feel bad for the guy because he, you know, obviously injured that shoulder in Montreal the Friday before, it was about 10 days before. Somehow, you know, got back into that hockey game, which was, you know,
unreal.
Knowing the stakes of the game. And, you know, we talk about hockey players being tough all the time. Maybe the biggest one is the fact that we didn't even really, you know, talk about it again until the injury happened again on Saturday, right? Like he left that game in Montreal, comes back, plays the next few games. He was at practice the next day at practice as well. Never really spoke of it again. And then you could see just, you know, how much pain he was in as he left the ice. And you just feel bad for Noah Hanifin because he has had an outstanding season for this team. And, you know, points aside, which started to come in the final, you know, in the last month or so for him as well. He's just been a steady constant for this team on the back end, a guy you could throw out in any situation. You know, he's going to give you good minutes. He's played really well with Chris Tanev, and then more recently played really well with Rasmus Anderson. He's just taken another step. He talked about it in the preseason. He talked about it in the training camp, and he has, to me, even taken another step beyond what he wanted to do.
You said it there. It started in training camp, and you know, year six in the National Hockey League. He said a lot of people thought they really had him figured out, and this is who he was. But it's hard to believe, but with 436 games under his belt, he's still only 24 years old and will be until January of next year. So it's just mind-boggling. But you're right, we saw him take his game to another level this year. And, you know, obviously if you're a Flames fan, that kind of progression has to excite you for when he returns next year, because, you know, of all the stories that have kind of surrounded the team this year, I don't think there's one more positive than the development of Noah Hanifin, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you need... How many times do we talk about building from the net out? I mean, you have Jacob Markstrom now locked up. You've got, you know, obviously Chris Tanev signed on a new deal. And, you know, you got your captain, Mark Giordano. But you need young guys who are going to be part of this core moving forward on that back end. And, you know, you have Rasmus Anderson, you have Noah Hanifin, and you have Yusuf Alamaki. And you kind of all need them to come up together. But maybe also just a point that Noah Hanifin is an example of how sometimes it takes a little time either A, to get in and to establish yourself as an NHL player, which he's already done that. He did that at an early age. But sometimes it takes a little bit of extra time to really take a step. And, I mean, look no further than number five, Mark Giordano. Yeah. I mean, he was one of those examples. And, you know, Noah Hanifin is showing that sometimes guys – figure it out to a different level at different times. He'd already figured out how to play in the NHL, but now he's seeing something in himself. And I think that's always been there, the belief level, but he's finding something more in his game and doing it on a really consistent level. And that's why you feel bad for the guy. Obviously, you know, rooting for him to get back and healthy as soon as possible. But that is a big loss for this team, without a doubt, just given the way he's played this year.
Well said. Obviously, the byproduct of that, no changes to the D pairings at Wednesday's practice, but Connor Mackey was on the ice. And,
yes.
You know, we'll see. I mean, eight games left in the regular season. He's already played three at this level earlier this year. Yep. But he had a chance to catch up with them about potentially getting back in the lineup and getting a look here before the regular season wraps up.
For sure. And you could sense the excitement for him just to be here again to get another opportunity at the NHL level. Obviously the heat season is nearing a conclusion there in Winnipeg right now and getting ready to wrap up. But for him, it's almost like a second life to come back here. And I mean, maybe it goes without saying and maybe it doesn't, but he said, you know, he feels almost like a completely different player coming back into the NHL than when he was here last. And it makes sense because when he played his first NHL game, his NHL debut came all games aside. We're not talking about pro and junior and call, like he hadn't played a game in over a year, period. Yeah. So you could understand now having played 27 games in the American Hockey League, just how much of a benefit that is alone, let alone the fact that there was now he has 27 or close to 30 professional hockey games under his belt. And he said he's just, it's the situations, it's the minutes he logged, the opportunities to play it at every single position or every single situation at that position, and just how much more comfortable he feels with all of those games under his belt. And you could sense some, you know, a quiet confidence about him. And I'm sure eagerly awaiting the opportunity to get a chance to get back in there, because, you know, in his head, he's far more prepared to take that step and to play at this level now. And again, it's nothing to do with necessarily, you know, his level of hockey. It's just the game's play, sure. Right? It's just getting game action in.
Well, and it's also interesting too, because last time he was here, Jeff Ward was the head coach. So to be able to come in under Daryl Sutter, who, you know, spoke on Wednesday and said he's not totally sure if he'll get in at this point, but it was probably most important that Connor Mackey gets a chance to, you know, be back at the NHL practice and kind of absorb some of the system changes that Sutter's been able to implement so far. And, you know, Brendan, can he play at this new pace that Daryl Sutter likes to talk so much about?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I don't think pace is something that Mackey will have a problem with. If you watch him skate, you know, he generally is got that with him. I think it's just more of a, you know, how quickly can you adjust, again, to the pace of the NHL,
sure,
and kind of figuring that out? Because as we know, it is a little bit different coming from the American League. And I know, you know, Cale McLean's talked about that little, there's, you know, slightly a little bit more of a scramble to it. With the NHL, is generally more structured in terms of guys knowing where they need to be and when. And sometimes that makes it easier, right? Is knowing exactly where that outlet is and just how to hit it. And sometimes that can help the pace. But in terms of the actual, you know, the way that this guy, you know, plays the game, I think it'll fit in pretty well. It's just a matter of adjusting to that NHL mindset.
All right. How about we get to our guest today?
We shall.
Somebody who I think has been a real nice surprise for the Flames this year after coming in on a PTO and really earning a bigger role as the season has gone along. Brett Ritchie coming up next.
When you need to borrow a ladder, or your pet runs away, or you want to get the top recommendations for local takeout food, the best people to turn to are your neighbors. Download Nextdoor, the free app with verified users in every Calgary community, keeping neighbors connected for great advice, recommendations, help, and more. Get the most out of your neighborhood with Nextdoor, connecting neighbors in communities all over Calgary. Download the app today or visit nextdoor.ca.
I'm pleased to welcome Flames forward Brett Ritchie into the program. Brett, thank you so much for your time, man. How are things?
Thanks for having me. Everything's good.
Right on. Hey, let's jump right into the obvious, because you've just arrived in Edmonton and obviously a crucial two games on tap with the Oilers now. What's the vibe with the team as you get set for the Battle of Alberta?
Yeah, these are obviously big games for us. We got to go on a run here to finish the season if we want to have any hopes of getting in the postseason. So obviously, you know, that's on the plate, and it being the Battle of Alberta, like you said, those are obviously big games no matter what the situation is. So, you know, we're ready.
We like to go way back. We do like to do the deep dive, but before we do that, what has it been like coming into Calgary? Obviously these are way beyond normal circumstances. We know that, but you know, the transition into this team and of the city, you know, what it's been like, and what's it, you know, the friendships like been in the dressing room?
You know what, it's been great. You never know when you go to a new team. It's always different. Every dressing room is a little different, but I think right from the start, you know, it felt pretty comfortable. I feel like it helped. Maybe I knew a couple of the guys coming in, and you know, so that I just think that the familiarity, even before I even got here, was there with some guys, and that just makes it easier for sure.
Who'd you know ahead of time, and where from?
Well, I trained with Chris Tanev for a few summers, so I knew him. There's a lot of guys from like the Toronto area where I'm from, so just bumping into them in different places. And I skate with Monahan and Giordano quite a bit as well, like each summer. So just, you know, like things like that, you get to know guys. And Monahan's, he's a year younger than me, but we played against each other in hockey and lacrosse and stuff growing up the whole way. So you know, I know him really well as well.
We always, just before you get into Deets, we always joke about the team Swede, but there's also like the team Ontario in there too. Yeah. You guys got a pretty good group. I know Mange isn't far from you either, from hometown.
Yeah. Mange is like 20 minutes from where I think we live, like 20 minutes apart right now, like back home in the summer. So he's a little younger than me, so I never really knew him until I got here. But There is a lot of Ontario guys. Like, I've been on teams, I think last year in Boston, I might have been the only Ontario guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, some teams are different.
Really?
And then you come here and everybody seems like they're from Toronto. So it's kind of funny.
That's awesome. Hey, we're gonna loop back on that lacrosse thing because I think that's fascinating. But I kind of want to go back to camp too, because you were sort of at a disadvantage in the sense that you came in about a week later than most guys, and you're on a PTO, so I can only imagine what that's like for a guy coming in. But what was the mindset like coming in, you know, getting that later start, but still having to fight for a job and not having the luxury of preseason games to really show what you're made of?
Yeah, that was really weird. It's obviously a weird year, you know, for in a lot of different ways. And I was a free agent, and everything was up in the air. It went right down to the last minute. And I just thought that Calgary would be a good fit to, you know, try and make a good impression. But like you said, you can only make the impression on a couple, you know, training camp practices and then that one inter squad game. So it was tough, but I was still confident. I knew, you know, that my style of play I might be able to help them out, and you just sort of be patient and do your best and wait for your chance. Right.
I know for a lot of guys, it's about finding the right fit, right? But for you, you've had some good years. You put up 16 goals with the Dallas Stars a couple of seasons ago, so clearly you can play at this level. Is it just a matter of finding the right situation?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, I was always confident in my abilities, and you know, sometimes you feel like it's a better fit in a certain place than others, and you know, it's just working out so far. So, you know, I'm happy about it.
When you look back at, you know, entering the league, I always like to go back to the draft story, but second round pick into Dallas, what was the experience like? What do you remember about, you know, the early lead up into it and just sort of your expectations versus how it turns out? Maybe, you know, it probably look back on it a little bit differently even now. Now you got a few years under your belt, but what do you remember?
Yeah, that was 2011. So that was 10 years ago now, which is crazy. You know, you're such a young kid, you don't know what to expect. I remember, like, for me, it was kind of like it was fun. It was in Minnesota. I was like on the edge of like, maybe I could go in the first round and maybe in the second round. So I wasn't really sure. And you know how they split it up. Like, the first round is the day before and the second, right? So, I had to sleep on it. Right. And that kind of sucked. But at the same time, I wasn't like one of those guys that was 100% thinking I was going to go in the first round and then I went in the second. So I was prepared either way. It's just kind of, to me, like, it is silly how they do that. Like, they split it up into separate days. I still think they should do it all in one. But it was a fun experience, you know, like, I had my family there and all your buddies that you grew up playing with and against are there. You get drafted as well. So it's just a great weekend.
Obviously, so many of the guys went pro, but you're kind of linked to that 2011 class for life in some ways, because a couple of years later, you got a chance to suit up for Team Canada at the World Juniors and happened to be at the same time as the NHL lockout. So you've got this host of talented players, including the number one pick, playing in that tournament. It was stacked.
Yeah, we were. It was the lockout year, which is weird. And that was probably an advantage for us. We had a couple guys. I think Nugent Hopkins he would have been in the NHL if it wasn't for the lockout, and maybe Dougie Hamilton. We had a bunch of good players that year. And, you know, that tournament, obviously with the result that we got, sucked, but it was a great experience. We were over in like Siberia, like in the middle of Russia, a place called Ufa. So that was pretty neat. You felt like, I remember we landed in Ufa there, and it was this little wee airport. We landed on like a foot of snow. We were like, what's going on here?
No wheels. Like, just
I'm a big Rocky fan. Like the movies, like The Boxer. And like, I felt like I was in Rocky IV. Like, you're landing in this place. Like, there's chains on the tires of the vehicles. Like, it's just like you've seen in Rocky. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool.
It was, wasn't it like a really nice rink too? Like, wasn't it a brand new rink?
Yeah. Like, I didn't know much about Ufa. Like, I'd never even heard of it when we went, but now, like, talking to the Russian guys, like talking to Nesterov on the team now, like, Ufa is actually a great city. It's just kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like, I guess Russia's like that. Like, they have a KHL team in Ufa, brand new rink. Like, everybody loves hockey. The fans are wild. It was very cool. Like, I think it's like it's on like the railway. Like, there's a railway that goes right through Russia. And like, so it's a big railway town. Like, everybody in the town works for like the factories and the railway, I guess. It was definitely different, but it is a big city. I don't know how many people are there, probably close to somewhere between like 500,000 and a million or something. It's a big city. And they love hockey, so it was cool.
I was working in Edmonton at the time, and I remember when Nugent Hopkins came back because the lockout ended just after the tournament. I remember looking at his bag tags, and it was just this long list, basically looked like a Costco receipt of all his stopovers that he had just to get home. So we were told Ufa was a long way from home, but I think nothing illustrated it better than that.
Yeah, we were, oh man, that flight, the flight back, he probably had one more connection because like he probably had to do, like we just went to Toronto. He probably went to Toronto and then to Edmonton. So he probably had an extra leg on us. But I remember we were in Ufa and then we flew to, I think Helsinki, Finland or something, and then to London. And then I was to Toronto and he would have went on to Edmonton, but each layover like kept getting delayed. So I think we had like a 12-hour layover in London and it ended up being like close to a 2-day travel day, like almost like 48-hour travel day, like in these airports. Like you're just like a zombie, like you don't even know where you are. You get home, you don't know what time it is. Like it's hard on the body when you think about it.
Yeah,
taking all those flights. But that was definitely the longest travel day I've ever been on.
You get a little what is it, the week-long break, or before you went, when, how long did it take before you played another junior game? Like you must have taken off a little bit of time then to sort the body out, figure out what day it was.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Did we have NHL? I think we might have had NHL camp after that. Like, I think the camps were in like January that year or something. So we might have played a couple games and then I went to Dallas. I remember, I think camp was in sometime in January. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. Because it would have started right after Christmas, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a whirlwind. I don't even remember if I played any games. I think maybe a few. And then everybody was off to camp because I remember Nugent Hopkins played in the NHL. Dougie Hamilton was playing on my team in junior for Niagara at the time. So we lost him. Like we were like a first place team. We lose our best defense and he was playing like 40 minutes a night to the NHL. So that really actually hurt us.
But
yeah, it was a crazy year.
Wow. That's insane. Hey, and speaking of, Ontario and the OHL, I mean, you mentioned it off the top there, the friendship or the rivalry, I don't know, I'll let you answer that, with Sean Monahan, but he definitely likes to, you know, he fancies himself the biggest lacrosse guy on the team. I did look at your point streak page and I saw that your Orangeville Northmen and Monahan's Brampton Excelsiors were at it quite a few times. So what was that like?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, so Orangeville and Brampton are like just down the road from each other, like 30 minutes, and both pretty big lacrosse towns. Like I feel like Orangeville is probably more so because it's smaller, but like everybody plays lacrosse for whatever reason. Like it's just a deep history of like lacrosse players coming out of there. So we were able to like compete with these bigger cities and stuff. And that was always like the team that we played the most because they're just down the road. Right. So my younger brother is 2 years younger than me. And then Monty's in between us. So they sort of combine age groups. Like it's not like minor Bantam and major Bantam. They do it all in one. So 1 year, Nick and my brother Nick would be playing against Monty all the time. And then the next year would be me. So he got a lot of us growing up in hockey and lacrosse, but mostly lacrosse. I don't know. I mean, I think as far as, you know, like head to head, I think maybe we had the upper hand a bit. Like he was a really good player, but I think we just had a stronger team, you know? So I think I would give Orangeville the edge on that one.
Nice.
And the cool thing about lacrosse though, like, especially in Ontario, I mean, you guys, it's kind of like minor hockey, I guess you're in the system, right? But then it goes all the way up into junior A and then they got like senior men's, but like that's your team the whole way up, right? Like you're right in the foundation of it.
Yeah. So none of us, we might've played a few games in junior, like we got called up at a midget or something lacrosse, but none of us, we started playing in the OHL and stuff. So we never really played a full junior career, but like in Orangeville, like he would have played for Brampton and I would have played for Orangeville in junior. And the teams that like the guys that are from cities that don't have junior A teams, they get, those guys then get drafted to the city. So we'd get kids from like smaller cities coming to Orangeville that we drafted. But otherwise, if you're a hometown Orangeville kid, you're playing for Orangeville. You can obviously get traded and stuff, but that's just how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, either way, it sounds like a pretty full schedule, but how did it work out for you? Was it lacrosse in the summertime and hockey in the winter and no off season really?
Yeah. The lacrosse season is a lot shorter than the hockey season. They overlap maybe a little bit. Like we never really got to play summer hockey that much because that was when lacrosse was on. But yeah, I think I remember most years I dropped my hockey stick and pick up my lacrosse stick right away. Like I maybe missed like a week of lacrosse, but right into it. So it was actually like perfect timing. You'd be busy all year doing stuff.
Are you offense all the way?
like box lacrosse, kind of, you like growing up, you play both. You play offense and defense. And we did a little bit of like front door, back door, they call it, where like you just go out for offense and change. But in Orangeville, a lot of times we were, everybody would play both.
Okay.
So, and then field lacrosse, we played field lacrosse too, but that's obviously different. Like there's in that sport, there's attack and there's defense, long poles and stuff. So, but I was always usually a midi or maybe an attackman, I guess. I don't know. Switch it around.
Transition.
Yeah, there you go.
Which one did you prefer? Was it, because it seems like you're built for box lacrosse.
You know what? Like field lacrosse in Canada is like a very, like, I think like a barbaric version of what like field lacrosse actually is. Like when I went down to the States and played some of the teams, like prep teams in the States, it's a whole different game. Like these guys, they don't wear any equipment, which is crazy to like a Canadian field lacrosse player, because like you're getting whacked and hacked so much more. But down there, it's like a very finesse game. It's completely different. So for that reason, I think I liked box lacrosse better. But I never really got to see to play like a lot of the true like field lacrosse, like you see these NCAA schools and stuff play. So I'm pretty biased towards box lacrosse, but I never really got the exposure.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about off season, and I was reading a little bit about working with Aaron Downey, like longtime NHLer, Stanley Cup champ, and you know, good guy. And just sort of your relationship, where does that go back to, and how did you guys get connected, and when did it start?
He's a great guy. Yeah, he. I didn't really know him. Like I knew of him growing up and stuff, because like, you know, where we were from, there wasn't many NHL guys, and he won a Stanley Cup. I remember when I was little, like that was really cool and stuff. But I never got to meet him until I heard that, like, until I was playing. I think I was playing my first year with him was my first year pro, maybe or something. But I heard he was he had just kind of retired, but he was starting up his own gym. Like he has a gym out of his house that he used when he was playing. He trained himself and a few other guys are in the area that played with him at the time. But so he wanted to start like training, you know, guys in the area and stuff. So I hopped on board with that right away, and I didn't even know what to expect, but I heard stories about, like, you know, like he'd be running down the river with weights and stuff, like doing crazy stuff and jumping through the potato fields and lifting weird objects and stuff. And I got there and that was true. Like it was really weird, but it's so much fun and unique. And it's different than obviously just going to a gym like most guys do every day and indoors and stuff. But it's been great.
It's you know, it's one thing to kind of hear the tales of it, I suppose, but another thing, like, did it feel like it made a huge difference right away?
I think it did. Yeah. I mean, like I trained with Gary Roberts before for one summer too. So like I had exposure to some great trainers, but it's just the uniqueness. Like sometimes I find you can get, it just gets stale in the summer going to the gym Monday right to Friday, you know, you're doing the same stuff. It's you're indoors. And once I got used to like going to Downs's and we'd be warming up out in the bush, or like it's always different. You're always on your toes. Having said that though, like it's really hard. It's not like you're out there goofing around. Like his workouts are very demanding and they make sense too. Like he's not barbaric in the sense that, like, you know, you're going to get hurt or something. Like it's very calculated. It's just in a unique way. Right. And it's just fun coming to the gym every day. You don't know what he's got planned exactly, but he's got lots. He makes all of his own equipment too, for the most part. Like he has like what he calls a gladiator course out back. It's all like homemade equipment, like whether it's like grip, like you're like doing like farmer's walk with these like weird uneven like welded weights, or like you're climbing ropes, or you're putting tractor tires on your shoulder and doing squats, like just weird stuff. You know, like it's really hard to explain, but there's some videos out there that show some of the stuff that we do on a daily basis. And he's really big into yoga too, which is something that you probably wouldn't think of him as a yoga guy, but he does like his own version of yoga that he'll run us through most mornings, like for as a warm up for 40 minutes or so. So it's a lot of different stuff, and it's really good. And I don't think any other guys in the league really get to experience that. He's very unique in that way.
How has it evolved over the years? Are you guys still doing the same types of workouts, and is it still a fairly small group, or has it grown to something more?
He's kept the group small. Like he lives in a really small town, outside a really small town. Like he's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like it's about 30 minutes north of Orangeville, and right out of his house. So guys in the city, and if you're not in the area, you're not going to go there, right?
Gotcha.
And as far as it changing, yeah, it has changed. Like I think he's changed his training the way the games went. the games got faster. The guys aren't as big and heavy and strong as maybe they used to be, like as a on an average. And there's a more of a paramount on speed and endurance and stuff. So I think our training maybe has changed a little bit as far as the amount of weight we're lifting, or we just incorporate more foot speed stuff and more, you know, injury prevention, a lot more yoga than we used to do, you know, stuff like that, that just the way the game's going, you have to do that. Right. So I think he's done a good job of adapting, because when he played, you know, even he'll tell you, like when he played, the game was a lot different, especially when he started. And even he had to learn ways to grow with the game. And if you don't grow with the game, you're going to get left behind. So I think he's got a pretty good handle on a pretty good feel for what we need.
Do you want to keep that group small, or are you trying to convince any of your Flames teammates? Because that seems like it's right up Gio's alley. He likes to keep his fittest Flame crown, you know?
Yeah. You know what? Like we've had, I don't think, like I said, because of where it's located.
Sure.
Stuff for guys to come, but we've had like gyms from the city, like a group of guys with one of the trains, and say they'll come down and for the day and do our like gladiator course workout with us or something, or run the river, or you know what I mean? Like they'll do something like that. And they think it's pretty cool. It's just hard to do for them in the city. They don't have the right setup, right?
For sure. What about him? Like, you go back and watch some of his tenure in the career. I mean, he was a tough dude. What stands out about him when you look at kind of his career and the way he went about it too?
Yeah, he's as tough as nails. Obviously, I've heard some stories like his first year, like he was playing in, it's called Honeywood, his little town he's in. And like, he was just playing like whatever single A, like junior C, whatever it was. And then he got a tryout with the Guelph Storm at the time in the OHL. And I knew the coach of that team. He was from Orangeville. His name's John Lovell. And he tells the story of like downs at the tryout, like just running around. Like you can imagine this potato farmer from Honeywood going out there and running around and asking everybody to fight and running guys in practice and like just trying to make a name for himself. And he knew that's what he had to do to make the team. And it's something that, like, that's just the way he is. He's scared of nobody, and he'll do whatever it takes to get it done. And even though he wasn't the most naturally gifted, like say like stick handler or even skater, like he was able to carve a path. And I think he played for 14 years, 14 one-year deals. Like he never even signed a two-year deal. So that just is a testament to how he stuck with it and grinded it out. And you know, like he's a big guy, I guess, but some of the guys he used to fight back then, you watch the video, he's given up some pretty good size. Like he's fighting Donald Brashear, he's given up, you know, close to 60 pounds and, you know, 6 or 7 inches or whatever it is. Like he was able to hang in there with these big guys and make a living, you know, scrapping and just being a good teammate, right?
Yeah, not like a typical heavyweight by height and size, but he fought. He was a heavyweight. Like,
yeah, he was pound for pound really, really tough for sure, yeah.
Unreal. Brett, you mentioned earlier your brother Nick, who's obviously playing with the Boston Bruins right now. But going back to the Richie household growing up, it's not just you two. We know your dad played hockey too, and I think your mom is a pretty accomplished athlete in her own right. Was it competitive growing up in the Richie household?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they were both athletes, so they got us into sports right away, obviously, and hockey and lacrosse right from the get-go. And yeah, we had a backyard rink that my dad would make growing up for us in the winter, and then right in with the lacrosse sticks after that, you know what I mean? So it was nonstop, and Nick was close enough in age that like we could compete. And you know, sometimes you see brothers that are like 5 years apart, but that wasn't the case for us. We were always sort of the same size ish and we're able to, you know, just have fun with each other playing in the backyard on the rink, and it was a lot of fun.
When you're in the middle of it, like, can you separate the fact that, you know, you had two brothers playing in the National Hockey League? Like, do you ever, you know, sit there and think about that from a kid perspective, or through like the landscape of, man, that was the dream and you got two of you there? Or is it too hard when you're in the middle of it?
I guess so. Yeah. Like I never really sit back and think about that necessarily, but I guess the odds aren't very good that would happen. Right.
Yeah.
But we sort of had like the same goal. Like we just wanted to play sports. I don't even think if you asked either of us what else we would have done, like, we don't even know, like, you know what I mean? Like that's all we cared about was the hockey and lacrosse. And even though my mom was a teacher and she made sure we did our schoolwork, but, You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And that was it.
So, it's a distant plan B, right? That's what.
Yeah, you just take it 1 year at a time, and then you realize that you might have a shot at it, and then you just keep going.
Did you guys ever play together? Or even going back to last year, I was trying to figure out, did you guys cross over at all in Boston, or how did that work out?
No, I got hurt, and Nick got traded, and then the lockout ended. The COVID started.
Sure.
So we never actually played in a game together, no. And the only time we would have played together, I think he would get called up a lot growing up, like, because he was 2 years younger. He'd get called up to our team, like, as an emergency call-up. And 1 year, our last year of lacrosse together, we played together. So that was pretty cool. But other than that, no.
Great stuff. Brett, thank you so much for your time, man. Best of luck tomorrow against the Oilers, and let's keep it going, eh?
Sounds good, boys. Thanks for having me on.
We need some video of these workouts though, like the river run especially. I'd love to see. I'm sure that that's not part of the plan is to get some video because you guys are doing it, but I'd like to see it.
Yeah, he's not like the most tech savvy social media guy, so he keeps it on pretty low key. But I'll see what I can do. Maybe get some footage for you guys.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, bud. Good talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
The Calgary Flames Foundation Online 50-50, presented by RE/MAX, is now live. Support Southern Alberta charities by purchasing your 50-50 tickets starting at 9 a.m. each game day, and watch the jackpot grow at calgaryflames.com/50-50.
Well, we know things are going to get pretty quiet for the Flames over the next week as this unique schedule gets even more bizarre. But before that, the Battle of Alberta is back on tap. The Oilers are heating up. Connor McDavid is doing what he does, going off. But two huge games if you're the Flames coming up here. And obviously, it shouldn't be too difficult to get up for these ones.
No, generally not. And regardless of what the situation is, you never want to leave anything on the table when it comes to your Alberta rivals. You never want to give them any advantage. And, I think you could probably expect the same. I know Edmonton will be playing in a back-to-back situation, but, for them, I think that last game is probably ripe in the back of their heads as well. I know that that's probably not their best product that they put on the ice in their last game when they lost 5-0 to Calgary here at the Dome. And, for Calgary, you still got hope, but you got to win. You got to win hockey games. And, unless you take, I think Mark kind of said it, Mark Giordano said it best the other day, just about, whatever happens on the out of town scoreboard really doesn't matter, apply to us unless we win our games. And you have to do that. You got back to backs against the Edmonton Oilers. And yeah, you said it. I mean, they're kind of rolling right now. So it is certainly a challenge. But we also, I mean, the conversation's heating up about McDavid and 100 points, and you certainly don't want to be. You don't want to be fueling that as well. So stifle it. They've done a good job against them, in a lot of nights. There's been a couple where he's gotten away for sure, but for the most part, they've done a pretty good job on him. So, go in there and play a couple of good games and see if you can finish this thing off strong.
Yeah, and it's important to note, too, that we're not obviously writing off the Flames here. The playoff race is still ongoing, but you talked about winning your games. Well, a little bit of napkin math here. I think if you're the Flames, something you should be targeting at this stage, 8 games left, probably 7-1. That's about the number, because you're hoping that the Canadians stumble a little bit and go a little bit under 500 down the stretch.
Four,
so
4-5.
Yeah, exactly. 4-5, and the Flames go 7-1. That is enough to get you in. So that has to be there's really no other way to look at it. So it's kind of like going back to this last weekend where you're thinking, okay, we have to take all three. Mm-hmm. Probably safe to just win all 8 the rest of the way for this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the mindset for sure. And but you're right. Something like 4-5 or 5-4 isn't completely unfeasible, no. Right? Like it's something that they've kind of played here the last month or so is around 500 hockey. So it's certainly within the realm of possibility. But again, you got to take care of your own stuff first, because you need those points to add up. And who knows, if you can win a couple of those, it puts pressure on them. And you never know how teams respond to that. They're also fighting the injury bug right now. Big time. We saw here in Calgary, they had guys banged up, and the lineups, as we know, on any given night were a giant question mark from game to game, just because of guys being, trying to make sure that they're ready to play. And so we'll see what happens. And, also we should say, Jonathan Drouin, we heard that news today. So obviously, wish him all the best as he takes a leave of absence from the Montreal Canadiens. But
the point is there's still a few things up in the air there, and you can never take that for granted, right?
If you're on the outside like we are, I don't think there's ever a position ever again where we can underestimate the value of Brendan Gallagher. The heart and soul of that team, their best player, and they've really struggled to produce offense without him. So they're going to be without him, as far as we know, probably for the rest of the regular season. And after that, who knows? But that alone, again, you talk about hope and, you know, potentially having them stumble a little bit down the stretch, certainly missing a guy like that. And Carey Price is still out. You mentioned Duran, and that's a huge amount of their depth that's taken a big hit here. So it's going
to
be interesting.
Luckily for them, Toffoli has picked up some of that slack, because boy, is he on fire right now.
Yeah. You know, I heard Peter Loubardius on the radio making a good point. He's a guy who, you know, maybe you have to start making consideration for Team Canada too. Like, there's an opportunity there for this guy to be scoring goals on the international stage, that's for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's got a feel for it right now. Obviously, we talked to him after the telecast in the last game, just about what he's feeling right now, and he just said, you know, when you get into these stretches, you just feel like you got to shoot it, and that's kind of the mindset he's had. He's just trying to fire the puck, and they're going in for him. And he kind of laughed, because at one point he thought that, you know, maybe earlier in the game there was a couple he missed that he should have buried. As he said, would have taken a few gray hairs or taken a couple of years of life off the boys, a little less stress. But you can't fault him for what he's been putting up numbers wise. And he's closing in on, I mean, he's closing in on a career high in goals in a shortened season. He's still got a pretty good look at it too, with 9 games left at the clip he's going.
Goal scorers, always looking for more. I was in a, you know, beer league stay-at-home defenseman. I can't really relate, so.
Glassing out.
I guess we'll have to take his word for how good that feels. I don't know.
Well, if you're a stay-at-home defenseman, the number just changed. It still feels good. You get one or two. That's the difference.
Yeah.
That's when you're hot.
Yeah, it's fine unless you're digging 6 out of your own net, so.
fair.
Got to balance it out.
Yeah.
Parks, great stuff as always. Appreciate your time, buddy.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right, and thank you for listening to the Firestarter Podcast, powered by Nextdoor, the neighborhood app.